Shall we begin with a little kirtan and then we can speak? Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nivasesha Sunyavadi Paskatya Desitarane.
Yes.
Those girls who don't understand English and would like to hear the lecture in Hindi, the translation is going on behind at three places. So please don't feel hesitation. If you don't understand English, it's fine. It's better to understand the lecture and go back and hear than just sit over here without understanding it. Don't feel anything. Please go back. They're having Hindi translation behind.
Anyone else? Hindi?
Sorry. Jis ladkiyon ko English mein lecture samajhne mein thoda sa takleef ho raha hai, wo kripa karke piche chale jaye. Wahan pe teen jagah pe Hindi mein lecture bataya jayega. Lecture samajhna zyada important hai. Piche jaake bina kisi hichak ke aap piche jaake sun sakte hain.
All right. So the first thing that I would like to say before I talk about any female qualities in particular is that if you're having a very exciting life, or if you're anticipating having a very exciting life, you must understand that you won't give that up unless you think that you're going to get something better. Right? If somebody has 10 rupees and someone says, I'll give you 1,000 rupees. So the person is thinking, my 10 rupees is inside this 1,000 rupees. So if I give you my 10, I will get back my 10, plus I will get so much more. So for me, I was thinking as we were having kirtan that I was having a very exciting life actually. I was traveling around the world. I had met famous rock and roll band leaders. I had made friendship with people in many different countries. I was trying to create a career that would have taken place in Australia, in America, in London. I had bought so many new clothes, I had so much new makeup, wigs, photographs, everything that you need to continue in a movie career. So I was just thinking, why did I give it up? I myself was thinking. And then when we started to chant, I remembered what it was like. Because in those days, this is 1970, in those days everyone's the influence. Now there are different influences, as we saw so cleverly in this little play. But in the 1970s, the influence was that of becoming a hippie. And a hippie meant that you don't do hard work, you don't live in the rat race with everyone running so hard for their education, running to make money. Why you do all these things? What do you have at the end of your life? Some money, but you can't take that with you. And what fun did you have? None. You just worked so hard. You had almost a nervous breakdown getting your top marks in the college, in the university. Your parents are pushing you and pushing you. And then after that you get married. You have to do so many things. You have a big house maybe, but you don't have any happiness in the heart. And so the people who were leaving society, we're going against these values of society. They were leaving to live like people living in the park, like a Prabhupada said, like a bum, if you know that word here. Just no house, no nothing, just smoke cigarettes, stay in the park, and some girls are there, some boys are there, they just get together. No idea, no wanting to become part of everything that's going on. And I was there in 1970 when Srila Prabhupada spoke to a larger group than this. Maybe four times this number of young people in San Francisco, which was the place that was most dynamic in the whole world at that time. And Srila Prabhupada was speaking to a hall of young people and he said, "You have given up the values of your parents. You have given up the values of your parents because you were disappointed. You were not satisfied with what they have worked so hard for. You didn't want that." He said, "But if you do not find something better, if you do not go up, then you will go down." So this was only maybe 2 months after I had made the choice to live in the temple and find out what it was like to lead a pure life, because anyone can think to become a movie actress, you don't lead a pure life. It's not possible. The two things cannot go together. You have to do all of the things that the materialistic people consider exciting. There's drinking, smoking, partying, so on and so forth. This is all part of the career. This is not a recreation. This is part of your work to do these things. So I had taken up a career like this, and now I was in America. I had just arrived, left my family, who were living in Australia, and now was my chance. And I was going to make it very big. I was very ambitious. I wanted to take up a very exciting life in America. But why did I join the temple? Even sometimes I would ask myself, why did I go and live in a temple? Now, everybody knows a temple's a bit boring, right? In a temple you have to live so many disciplines and you have to get up at a certain time. You have to chant every day, so many things. And here was this exciting lifestyle. I was going to take up this disciplined lifestyle. And I did it all of a sudden. I visited the temple and I never left. I went to the temple on Sunday. I had a pen. I was supposed to bring it as a messenger and give it to Prabhupada. I gave it to the people who would give it to him. And then I thought, if I leave here, I will not be able to lead a clean, pure life. Because I knew what I was already doing. And it was not easy to make such a big change. But what did I do all day? And the fact is that what I did all day in those days in the Hare Krishna movement was I went out three times a day on the street, one time a day in downtown Los Angeles, which was a very modern place, one time a day at night on Hollywood Boulevard, where all the movie stars have their names written on the pavement. And what would we do on Hollywood Boulevard? We would line up 10, 20, 30 young people, all in their early 20s. And we would start chanting Hare Krishna. And we would chant so dynamically, and it was so new in America, that very quickly there'd be a huge crowd around us. And we'd all chant in time, not just chanting, chanting, chanting. We'd go one, two, three, and off we'd go, and we'd all dance like this, and we'd turn circles, and we'd play kartals, and we'd smile at the people, and the people were amazed. And we would go outside the movie theaters. And there I was laughing. I'm outside the movie theater. I was inside the movie theater. Now I'm outside the movie theater, and sometimes till 11 and even 12 o'clock at night, we would chant Hare Krishna outside the movie theater, and we would chant like this. And I remember I would look up in the sky and I would see the sky was dark and there were stars. So the stars were in the movie theater and the stars were in the sky, and I would feel as if I was just floating and dancing up with these stars, not these stars. So this was a special gift of Srila Prabhupada, that he brought this chanting of Hare Krishna to the West. And he wanted that this would be taken up by these young people who weren't satisfied by the values that they had been born and brought up by. They were looking for something. But they were looking for it in a way, sometimes by rebellion, sometimes just by social pressure, sometimes just out of curiosity, but they were looking for it in an area that wasn't necessarily going to be good for them. So we just saw a very humorous, but also a very thought-provoking little portrayal of three different developed stages of the Indian feminine psyche. So when I joined the Hare Krishna movement in 1970, I had been a devotee of my own choice. I was 21 years old. I hadn't told my parents because they were in Australia and they would be very shocked. What had I done? And I didn't know if I could explain it properly to them. They may change my mind. So I didn't tell them. I was traveling alone. I didn't say anything to them until I became certain of what I was doing. But in 1970, Srila Prabhupada, he left America. He had come to America in 1965. He left America, and what did he take with him? He took with him a group of young Americans. And where did he go? He came back to India. And he traveled around India with these young, you could say, half-transformed persons, devotees. Half-transformed means that they still weren't completely comfortable in this new choice of lifestyle that they had taken up. They weren't at all familiar with India. They didn't know anything about the cultural ways and manners of India or anything. They were just young, American, newly joined hippies. But he wanted to bring them to India. Why? Because, as we just heard, for 200 years, the Indian culture was subjugated. And practically, if you read the history books, the Indian culture was gradually becoming subjugated more and more and more as Kali Yuga, this particular age, has progressed. It wasn't new. But the subjugation was that, Srila Prabhupada said, in something like, 200 years, the English did more damage to the Indian culture than the Mughals did in hundreds and hundreds of years. Because they undermined the values of the Indians through the educational system. They placed, for example, before the young Indians, the Darwin's theory, a theory that says that it discredits the Vedic understanding, the Vedic culture, the old traditional Shastra of India. It discredits all that and said that Indians were Dravidians. They were very primitive. The primitive race were the Indians until the Eurasians came across the Himalaya mountains and brought the standard of Indian culture up through their religion. They had an objection to the Hindu Dharma. They wanted instead to place the superiority of Christianity before the Indian people. So it was the English influence that began the revolution in India. Now we see it is perhaps, you could say, it's coming very much from America. It's the American influence. One after another, there is one technological, dynamic, exciting gadget that if you don't have it, you're really, really missing out. First you have to have the internet. Then you have to have some kind of a pod, an iPod or something, so you can listen to the music. Then you have to have this, then the mobile phone, then the this, then the this, then the this. So that people cannot stop from collecting the latest fad, latest technological fad, to keep India in touch with the rest of the world. And to bring India to out of its primitive state of morality and into a nicely compatible, no guilt feelings, enjoy life, do whatever the rest of the world is doing, a kind of a mode like this, it has to begin through the educational system. So the people who feel this most are the young, Because that is where they begin. They start the influence very young. Everyone likes to follow and be accepted when they're young. And then as they grow up, it's already in there. And so therefore, automatically, everything else will follow. You'll have to buy this, and you'll have to have this. And if you don't have one of these, all your friends will talk about you behind your back, that you're very old-fashioned, and you're really missing out. So this is how, and not only in India, all over the world, this revolution is taking place, a revolution of values. So because of this, and because this began very sweetly in the 70s, it was a flower revolution. We will get love and peace and happiness. No more hard work. Now everybody should enjoy life. This was the motto at that time. But now it is not like that. Now it is consume this, buy this, taste this, try this, buy another one, take this, have this. This is the way that the world is working today. You must experience this here, and is even more powerfully in influence on the young, or to speak of the older generations, in Australia, America, Europe, practically throughout the whole world. No place is exempt from this. So Srila Prabhupada, because the British influence reduced the confidence of the Indian people in the superiority of their own culture, he knew that the best way to preach was to bring Westerners who had taken Krishna consciousness as their lifestyle and bring them to India, and they should speak. And they should speak to the Indians who were trying to get rid of their culture, and they should explain to them the valuable things that they shouldn't give up. So he did that. In 1970, he brought young girls, young boys to India. He had young girls who had very nice voices, and they were very modern, and they would lead the kirtans, and Srila Prabhupada would take them from town to town, state to state in India, and try to begin a revolution of in reverse. The revolution went this way, just like you can see sometimes if you throw a ball, it has a momentum, you throw it, and then it hits the wall over there, and what happens? It starts to come back again. So to bring back this tidal wave, he brought the beginning through these young Westerners. But then he wanted more, and so he established centers in Mayapur, in Vrindavan, in Bombay, in different places in India, and he wanted big temples built so that the Indians could come, they could take darshan of the deities, they could see their culture being respected, and they could maybe, if they were inclined, they could inquire more deeply into what is actually the nature of our culture. Because, practically speaking, I think I might not be far from the truth if I say that most young people today, they're not so much interested in this. Am I right? They've got other things on their mind. They want to kind of keep up with things. They're interested in what's going on overseas. And Indian, it's okay, but it's not that important to them. Now, my subject was not this, but I thought of this when I saw you all sitting here, and I found myself chanting, and it was so nice to hear all your voices coming back. It was the gift of the evening for me, because generally there's so many men and they sing in a different key, and it's not that much fun singing with men. Either you have to sing their key and it's a little hard on the throat, or I sing and they sing funny because they can't sing in the same way, and so it's a bit annoying. So it's so nice to hear a whole group of young girls and young ladies and even a little older ladies all chanting together. So it was very nice. And another thing I would have to say is that you can't leave something unless you get something better, right? If you don't get a better job, why leave the one you have? Might as well keep there because at least you've got something. So if you have a job that's very nice, someone would have to offer you a fantastic job to change your work. But similarly, not only can't you leave something in order to, unless you get something better, but you can't stay unless it really is better. If it really isn't better, you won't stay. So I had the good fortune, by Srila Prabhupada's reciprocation for the giving up of something that I thought was the best thing I had, that by his arrangement, I got to spend some time living in Vrindavan. And I don't know how many of you have been to Vrindavan. But Vrindavan, we saw a beautiful dance. Vrindavan is such a place that there, in Vrindavan, if you hear about the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, you understand what is real feminine qualities, what the perfection of femininity is, what is the most beautiful, who are the most beautiful girls, and how exquisite they are. Now again, it's not much fun talking about this when all the men are here, because they're, you know, it's more fun. All the girls together is a much more intimate situation. We can talk in a different way. When the men are here, we have to be a little bit mindful that they can't understand what we're saying, because they can't enter into this subject matter directly. But I learnt in Vrindavan that it was very nice to be a woman, because by being a woman, you could actually think about the pastimes or the activities of Krishna when he plays with the gopis. And he has so many loving pastimes with them. And instead of thinking all the time, oh, what are all these women? What are all these stories about women? We can think, oh, it would be so nice to be part of that particular feminine situation. Because the gopis, they actually manifest the complete beauty of a woman. The completeness that you cannot find in this world. Now that's hard to accept, because we live in this world. And so therefore we look at this world and say, this is my life, this is reality, and I know this, I know that, I can see this, I heard this, I can do that, this is it. But perhaps this is the greatest secret that Srila Prabhupada gave personally to myself, was that he broke that by allowing us to spend some time living in Vrindavan, visiting the places of Krishna's activities, his Leela in Vrindavan, and coming to hear about these wonderful pastimes. Because by hearing them, this is the thing that will protect you more than anything else in this whole world. If you develop love or attraction for Krishna, if you actually do that, you won't want to take part in the things that are going on in this world. In the same way as if you have in front of you a big plate with a wonderful meal on it, and over here there's an empty plate. You won't want that, you want this. So this is actually, I would say for myself, this is the gold standard that makes the notes of Krishna consciousness really valuable, is the actual taste of learning about Krishna in Vrindavan. So here we see, not right now, but we will see when the curtains open, there is a Vrindavan-like atmosphere. And that is not accidental, but that is to encourage those who are inclined to come a little closer into that particular atmosphere. But I'd like to talk to all of you, not only the ones who have some experience spiritually, but also those who don't, and those who are a little uncertain whether they want that, and those who are struggling perhaps even to keep their values whilst they're living within the culture as it is, the time as it is at the present. The first thing I wanted to do actually was I wanted, before branching off into Vrindavan, I wanted to ask you some questions. I want to ask you one question. I wanted to hear from you what you considered as female qualities. And I'd like them to be written here on the board. So anyone who would like, please put up your hand or shout out very loudly if you can think of anything that you think of as a feminine quality. Let's see who's very brave and modern.
Shyness.
Shyness, yes. Thank you. Shyness is a feminine quality. Any more? Yes. Loving and caring. Do we have a writer on the board? Yes.
Soft-spoken.
Loving and caring, yes. Chastity, yes. Virtuousness, yes. Let's hear some modern ones. Yes. Being a devotee.
Sacrificing.
Wait. It's sacrificing. It sounds like we only have devotee answers here. I want some of the modern ones. What else? What's a modern female?
Motherhood.
Motherhood? That's not a modern
devotion.
One. That's always there.
Devotion.
Devotion, yes. But some of these, even anyone can have. I want the feminine, yes? Strength. It's a good one. Strength, yes?
No.
Being herself. She loves herself. She can be herself.
Shingar, shingar karna.
Dressing very nicely. Yes.
Forgiveness.
Forgiveness. Are you catching these? They're a little quick.
Tolerance.
Tolerance.
Confidence.
Wisdom, confidence. Yes.
Submissiveness.
Obedience, submissiveness. Oh boy, you've got all the good ones. I want some of the bad ones. Come on, what are some of the modern ones? Independence. Independence. Yes. Put down independence. You can put it on the other side if you like. Okay. Huh? Empowerment. Jealousy. Yes, that's a very feminine quality, unfortunately. You know that feminine quality is also
gossiping.
In Vrindavan.
Gossiping. Nagging.
Gossiping.
Oh. Nagging and gossiping.
Nagging and gossiping. Ladies talk a lot.
Dominating.
Dominating. Greedy. Envious. Selfishness. How about good looking? How about skinny? You have to be skinny nowadays. You have to make sure that if you eat a lot, then you have to have an eating disorder so that you can somehow or other make up for your liking eating and stay skinny. So you have to have something like this. It's very common in the West. Many people have one of these. What else? Attention seeking? Is that it? Yes? Attention seeking? How about free thinking?
Vanity.
Vanity. Free thinking. You don't listen to anyone else. You have your own thoughts. You can work things out for yourself.
Fickle-minded.
Fickle-minded. Yes.
Emotional.
Emotional. That's a very good one. Because that can mean so many things.
Mataji,
can be good or bad.
Self-centered.
Self-centered. That's a good quality because it means that you're centered in yourself. Right? And so nobody can push you around.
Egotism.
Because you're very strong. Yes?
Egotism.
Egotism. Any more? Yes? Constructive. Constructive. Yes. I have a good one too.
Possessiveness. Possessiveness.
Perfectionist.
Possessiveness.
Possessiveness. Yes. How about this one? Equal to men. Yes? Put that one down. And here's another one. They have to have lots of fun. Right? We saw that. They have to have a good social life. Right? They have to be accepted in a social group of some sort, and they have to have like that. And another good one of modern day is they should not be tied down. Right? No tie, don't ask me, don't push me too hard. If you push me, then I'm going to do something you won't like. I shouldn't be tied down. There's one over here. Challenging. Yeah? There's two points about this challenging. One is that you want a challenging job. For myself, I wanted something to do, a career that was challenging, that I could do something that nobody else had ever done. I wanted to be so self-important. So this challenging was there. And the other thing is...
Shopaholic and spendthrift.
Shopaholic and spendthrift. This one also I've heard of before. Yes. Ambitious? Yes, this is a very important one. Ambitious and career-oriented. Yes. Balanced. Yes, balanced. One time I met one lady. It was at the Juhu Beach Temple. And I doubt that anybody here knows her. And it was nearly 15 years ago, so I don't know if she's still even there. But she began, when the temple guest house was opened, in Srila Prabhupada's time practically, 1978, she took responsibility for cleaning all the rooms. And sometimes somebody who's a supervisor of cleaners, they send the boys to the rooms, right? And they give them the key, and when they come back, they take the key and put it back. That's the extent of their responsibility. But this lady would go to every room every day and stand there while the boys cleaned the room. And she'd go to the next room. And she would start her work, I think it's something like 7:30 in the morning. And she worked until really late at night. And she told me then, I said, what do you do when you go home? She was not even a Hindu. She was a Christian. I said to her, what do you do when you go home? She said, well, when I get home, I live an hour from here. I get home around about 8:30 at night. Then I have to cook a meal for all the family. And then, because I work 6 or 7 days a week, I have to also wash all the clothes and so on and so forth. So I don't go to sleep until around about 11:30, 12. And then I have to get up in the morning around 5. And then I have to take care of this and this and this, and I have to go to work. And she had been doing this, I think perhaps when I met her, it was in 1993, and she had been doing this for a very long time already. And it was a very striking example. Perhaps you know of somebody like this. I didn't. But she was so balanced. She did her day work. She did her night taking care of the family. I said, don't you find sometimes it's exhausting? She said, yes, it's exhausting, but what can I do? This is my, you know, I have to do this. And she had been doing this service, even though she had some payment for her work at the temple, but the mood in which she did it in was superior to the mood of service that most of the devotees would work with. So when I went there, I thought, I've met somebody very extraordinary here. Even though she takes a salary for her family, she's a very extraordinary person. There are people like this. Anywhere in the world you can find there are special people. But India used to be a place where many Westerners, I can tell you, many of my friends, many people I know, they used to come to India because they wanted relief from some of these qualities that we've just put on the board. They wanted to go somewhere where they would be in an atmosphere where they could be relieved of these qualities, because of the pressures of their lifestyle and because of the effect of what type of things they were doing. And I remember in 1970 when I went to the temple Krishna arranged for me that before I went on my way to the temple, he gave me a little bit of a spanking. Does everyone know what a spanking is? When you take someone and you give them a slap, but it's for their benefit. So he gave me a very sharp slap. He showed me the stark reality of the life that I was leading in a little experience that I had. And then I got to the temple. And when I got to the temple, I was a little more thoughtful than I was when I left my house where I was staying. In fact, I was a lot more thoughtful. And when I went inside the temple and I saw the atmosphere inside the temple and the deities, they didn't have such an elaborate deity situation as you have here, the beautiful altar and so forth. But when I saw the atmosphere, I thought to myself, this is a place that I might find a little relief. So on one side, my life was very exciting. And many people would have envied me, and perhaps they would have wanted to have such a lifestyle themselves. They would think, wow, she's so lucky, she gets to do this, she's so exciting. And it was. I can say it was exciting. On the other side, there was so much anxiety and so much uncertainty because everything was resting on my independent, free-thinking, self-centered, career-oriented shoulders. It was all up to me. I was choosing my life to be the way I wanted it. And so when I shifted my values quite radically, I myself didn't even know if I would be able to actually accept such a change for the rest of my life. But as you heard, Srila Prabhupada was very clever insofar as that he said, please, just try to follow these simple principles for one life, this life. And after that, you do whatever you want. You can become a world-famous movie star if you want. You can become this, you can become that. But just for a little time, you take up this process and see if it benefits you. So now, some of the female qualities that have been mentioned here...
One more thing.
Yes.
Yes. That now woman has become progressive and powerful. That's the most important thing.
Progressive and powerful.
Yeah.
Yes, women must become powerful. This is a fact. And not only there used to be that women had to be equal to men, but now they should be more powerful than men. But we should understand where this leaves us as women. It leaves us in a very, very awkward place. Because, as we will see, there are certain qualities within men or women which are considered virtuous because they're feminine. Just like you know in the Hindi language, and maybe also in Marathi, in Sanskrit, and also in Latin, from which English comes, there are male and females, right? The nouns have male and female. And also there is another culture that we can look at about this, and that is the Chinese culture. So if you know anything about the Chinese culture, it is a very balance-oriented society, and it's based on retaining the balance between two opposites. Does anyone know what they are called in Chinese? Yes, yin and yang. And yang represents what? Masculinity. And yin represents femininity. So I want to go through with you some of the qualities according to the Chinese culture. So this is not Indian culture, so that you think, oh, this is our ritualistic ancestors' influence. But this is in Chinese culture. This is nothing to do with male or females, how men should be and women should be. But these are male and female qualities. Female qualities, receptivity, submissiveness, gentility. Now I'll give you the male beside. The receptivity. The female is receptive, the male is creative. That doesn't mean that men are creative and females are receptive, but it means that within the individual, the receptivity is considered female and the creative is considered male. Submissive is a female, a yin quality. And boldness is considered a male quality. Gentility is considered a female quality. And strength is considered a male quality. To yield, to be able to yield, is considered female. And to stand firm is considered a male quality. To nurture is a female quality. And to protect is a male quality. So as the females become more and more assertive and more predominantly masculine in their approach to life, the corresponding effect worldwide is that the men become more and more and more weak. And eventually the men become so weak that, as I was looking something up, and I came across a newspaper heading, and it was explaining that now in America, it's completely acceptable in certain places to have the same gender marriage. The woman has become so masculine, the man has become so feminine, that the whole thing becomes ruined, practically speaking. There is no distinction. They have shops where the men go to have their hair done and the women go to have their hair done in the same shop. And if the woman gets in first, she's not going to let the man come. You go away, I'm here first. So this is the thing that's taking place all over the world. And for somebody who is watching it, somebody who has been taken out of it, somehow or another, despite their unwillingness to be taken out of it and placed on the peripheral edge of it and is watching the world flow by, it's quite shocking. It's quite shocking what is taking place all over the world and also in India and especially in Mumbai. Because why? Mumbai is the leader of India in all the fashions and trends. Everything comes here, Bollywood and so forth. It starts here, and the movies and everything, and everything is very, very, this is somewhere in between. You're not in India and you're not in the West. You come to Mumbai and you can enjoy life. But this is the effect. So it's not a bad thing when you take something up to consider the effect of what it's going to cause later. But most people don't want to do that. Isn't that amazing? It's amazing, actually, that most people do not want to think ahead. They just want to do. They want to have a good time, do this, try that, do this, and they don't want to think ahead. Now, here's a question that may come to some young girl's mind. It would have come to mind if I was sitting there. So does that mean that I have to do everything that my parents tell me? Does that mean that I can't be part of modern society? I have to just be old-fashioned and conventional? And the answer is no. That's not what it means. Recently, I was in Udupi, just a couple of weeks ago. And whilst I was there, I met some girls, Indian girls, some of them were expatriates. And they were telling me about the Manipal. Who has heard of Manipal? Yeah, Manipal. I don't know if you've heard, but Manipal is a very popular educational part of India and South India, where a lot of people come from overseas. And there's a lot of modernity there. And so this girl, she said, I've been studying here since 1997. She was studying medicine. And she said, and in the year 2000, I met devotees, and I decided that I wanted to be a devotee. So I stopped my studies for some time, and I went to live with devotees, and I learned something about Krishna consciousness. Then I came back to Manipal, and I have been here for a couple of years. And she said, and she was just speaking to me in a casual way, she said, it's amazing how much change has taken place here. And the first thing she told me, because she was a doctor, she said, do you know that this place, Udupi, the district of Udupi, which includes Manipal, has the highest rate of HIV in all of India, the highest rate. She said, I'm a doctor, an apprentice doctor, and I'm treating people with this disease all the time. And there isn't any cure for this. And I tell them so many things, but there's no guarantee that they won't pick this up in their promiscuous, free thinking, do whatever I feel, do it in this new lifestyle, modern lifestyle. These dangers, they're just sort of waiting. There's no guarantee that you won't be met by one of these problems. So she told me now in Manipal they have all the dormitories are air conditioned. They have really nice places to stay. They've started so many technical colleges. And they're trying to get foreign students, foreign Indian students, expatriate Indian students. She said, but the standards of morality are radically changed. And we have young boys who are students coming in here with alcoholism as their problem. Because they have to take a drink every day to be able to manage the stress that it takes them to study for their careers. So she was telling me all of this and my heart was sinking and I was thinking, oh no, even in India, I come here to get away from all these things. But now I find them here also rising up at such a rate. So I said to her, what do you think? What's the future? And she said, well, she said, you know, the interesting thing is that although it's changing so radically and people are becoming so immoral, the opportunity to preach has radically increased. She said, we hold programs as students. We hold programs in the university on Saturdays and Sundays in the student campus areas. And so many students come, not to hear the philosophy. They're not interested yet in the philosophy. Neither was I. I was only interested in the chanting. But I began with the chanting. And the chanting is very powerful. She said, they come, they just like it. It releases some of the tension of their lifestyle. So they come and they chant. And then what do? They go back to their places all over the world. They're coming from all sorts of places. She was coming from Kuwait. She was born in Kuwait, from North India, Kuwait. She comes back to Manipal and there she meets devotees. She comes, and it was devotees actually from Chalpati who had gone there to give lectures in the university there that she had heard, and it had changed her whole life. So nobody, no intelligent person recommends anyone to go backwards. It's not intelligent. No one should go backwards. Everyone should go forwards. But people should understand the choices that they have and the repercussions of the choices that they make so that when they choose, if they choose to go forward in this direction or they choose to take that direction forward, they know what they're going to expect. So this is, of course, a very enormous subject and I cannot go into all the details of the subject here. And also I do not want to actually try to convert you all to my way of thinking, because that's not fair. You've all come here as I went to the temple, and I wasn't interested in being converted to anyone's way of thinking. I wanted to hear something, and if by chance it made sense to me, I would take it a little seriously. I might even take another step. But if it didn't make sense to me, I wasn't going to do anything with it until it did. This, for better or worse, is a modern Western female quality. Now, just to finish, and then I want you to ask me some questions. I wanted to explain, along with these Chinese qualities of male and female, in Bhagavad Gita, there are female qualities listed, and Krishna says, I am these qualities. He's not female, he's male. But he says, I am these qualities. If you want to find me, you look in these qualities, and you'll be looking at me if you see these qualities. So these qualities are not only those of a person in a female body, but they're part of one's, the feminine side of one's nature. So these qualities are kirti, or glory. Prabhupada says, one becomes glorious or famous if one is very, very, very fortunate and pious. If one leads a pious life, he becomes kirti, or very famous, glorious. Shri. Shri is translated here as opulent, or one who possesses good fortune and beauty. This is a feminine quality. So we say Shri, Srimati, Shri Krishna. Srimati Radharani and Shri Krishna. Because this Shri is a quality of Krishna, but it's feminine. The third one is Vak. This, my pronunciation must be embarrassingly terrible to you. But this Vak in English means fine speech, or one who speaks very gently or beautifully. And Srila Prabhupada adds a little word of praise here for the Sanskrit language and says that the Sanskrit language is actually the most beautiful language in the whole world. The fourth one, we've got Kirti, famous, Shri, good fortune and beauty, Vak, speaks very nicely. The next one is Smriti, or one who can remember, memory. And Prabhupada says, to give an elaboration on this word Smriti, he says that one who can study something and hear it and learn it and remember and apply it. This is Smriti, or good memory. Not only that you, everyone knows, right before your exams, you sit and you memorize page after page after page after page of technological knowledge, and you go into the exam, and what do? The next day, you forget everything, right? It's all forgotten, because it's irrelevant anyway. It was only relevant to pass that stupid exam. Once the exam is finished, then the rest doesn't even matter. And if you were to keep your textbooks for your whole life, you know, and go back when you were 25, 30, 40 and read them, you would find they're totally out of date and they're irrelevant information. But at that time, we need it. So we think, this is a good memory, someone who can memorize so much data. But actually, real memory is applied to hearing and then applying something. The next one, the fifth one, is called Medha, or intelligent. And Srila Prabhupada says that one who can read something or hear something, and then after that they can assimilate it, they can think about it, they can understand it, and then they put it into action. This is called intelligence. So this intelligence is also a feminine quality. The next one is dhriti. Dhriti, Srila Prabhupada translates in English as steadfastness, or somebody who can overcome unsteadiness by being firm. And the last one is shama, or patience, forgiveness, or keeping balance. We heard this one, keeping balance. Keeping balance in the good and the bad times. So these are considered, whether you see them in a man or you see them in a woman, these are glorified as exalted feminine qualities, which Krishna says, I am the source of these. This is me. In these qualities, you will be meeting me. So I would like to stop for a moment here and ask if anyone is brave enough to have a question. There's a hand. What's your balance, if you're confused? Well, my first thought is that you have to find some people on the other side. Because usually most of the people, you're not balanced because you're way over here. You're not having enough friendship with girls your age, young girls your age who have a mentality of trying to keep an equilibrium within this new modern lifestyle. Because generally speaking, there's a tendency to be affected by those who are going to the extreme. And if you're not affected by those who are going to the extreme, you'd probably have a bit of a balance. If you're affected towards that side, I would say that first of all, you should get something on the other side so that you have a balance. And then you should try to listen to them. And you should try to go into seeing what they're doing and why they're doing it. Now, that's not going to be enough for you, but let's start there. Let's hear from you again. Because you're willing to speak up.
I've heard from young women in similar groups to this in India that they're encouraged to go to the university to get a degree in some subject matter, maybe education or IT or whatever. And then after that, they're supposed to get married and put that whole education aside and not do anything with it. And they're finding that to be very dissatisfying, because they actually like the idea of having a career or knowing something. They want to use their skills, but they're encouraged not to use them. They're encouraged just to get married and set them aside. And their skills become kind of a credential to get married, to find a good husband. Okay. It's part of the advertisement.
Yes. Well, I would say for myself, if I was in that situation, that I'd be very frustrated, because I would already be developing some talents or some parts of my personality that I would like to do something with. Now, I could take them outside and do something in the world. That's one choice. You know, I could get career-oriented and get a job and say, I'm just going to get on with my career. But I do talk to sometimes to people. In fact, I talk to my daughter sometimes, who has a career, about all the stresses and pressures that she experiences in her career. She's a chartered accountant. So she's working a full-time job. She has to come home at night, and she has to do so many things at night. And on the weekend, she hardly has enough time to do anything. Her spiritual aspirations have been kind of really cramped down. She's unmarried. Imagine if she had a husband also that she had to include within her formula. So she tells me all the time the frustration she's experiencing in her professional career. Then she tells me that what she really wanted, this is her, it may not be any of you, but she says, what I really wanted was I wanted to do something interesting with my life. I didn't want a boring life. And I also wanted to share something with a husband. In fact, for her, because she has known Krishna since she was born, she said, I was hoping I could do something with it to use it for Krishna. That's what I was hoping. But instead, here I am. I've got to go to work. I'm working really hard. Here's the opposite. If you're being told you have to get married and stay home and take care of the family, she doesn't have that problem. But you can, if you listen to the problems on the other side, then you can start to think, okay, well, what is my situation? And what's the best that I can try to do? Not what would I love to do if I had all the freedom in the world. I'd probably, like we saw of the three young girls, the third one, so restless and flighty and bored and, you know, and irritated and not at all in touch with what's really going on. Hardly not even at all. Just like immersed, you know, I want this and then I want that and it's boring. And one thing I'll say, and this may not be in that little scenario, I saw what I see a lot in the West. I think, as far as I've heard, that Indian young women are kept very busy with their studies, so that they're supposed to work very hard, so they're not allowed to be bored. But in the West, they don't want to do household things. They don't want to do anything at home. They don't want to do these things. And then they're bored. And when you try to ask them, what would make you not bored? They don't know. And so what do? Because they're so bored. They spend all the time on the computer playing computer games. And they're so bored. And they're more bored. Because they have freedom. You don't have that freedom yet. Don't worry, it will come, unfortunately. But they have it already there. And so I'm bored. My parents tell me this. Oh, I don't want to do that. I'm going to do this. So it was quite sobering to me to see the very nicely portrayed modern Indian example, because it was so similar to what I'm aware of. You also, I think, because you deal with the young in America. I deal with sometimes with the young in Australia. When you take out of life any sense of serving others in some way or another, you're bound to be bored. And if you fill up life with obligatory service, you may also be bored. But if you're fortunate enough to be able to take the talents and abilities that you have and try and use them in a really direct way to serve others, to give others something, you won't be bored. It's like a mysterious law of how the world works. You won't be bored if you try to serve others. But it has to be generating from your own desire to do it if you want it to be fully satisfying. Old-fashioned, and not old-fashioned in a negative sense, old-fashioned culture, people were dominated by a sense of duty. They had a sense of responsibility and duty, so they were satisfied with that. But modern society puts that as, like, ridiculous. So you'll be facing this here. It's already very strong all over the world. And the next thing you have to remember, modern young Indian ladies, is you can't expect to keep a husband. Be satisfied with the fact that in the West, at least one or two times divorce is pretty good. You can't keep a husband because you don't want to serve him. And he doesn't want to serve you. He wants to enjoy himself. He wants to have a dynamic time. You want to have a dynamic time. He's not interested in loving you and your problems. He's interested in having a good time. This is the new standard. It's a me society. I'm having a good time. So the value in the West is, in 10 years from now, if you're growing and I'm growing in the same way, we'll stay together. If we decide to get married, we may not want to get married because marriage is a burden. If we get married, 10 years, we'll check it. And after 10 years, we'll see if we like each other still, right? And after that, you go your way, I won't stop you. And you take the children, of course. And then I go find somebody else, and then you meet some poor man whose wife left him, and he has two children, and you have two children by two husbands, and you get together, and you have a nice Kali Yuga happy family. This isn't a joke. This isn't a joke. Do you know, a friend of mine who's a school psychologist in Perth, Western Australia, which is a conservative place, which is now catching up with the rest of Australia. She's a school psychologist, and there are many schools in which more than 50% of the children have only one parent. More than 50%. And so it's no longer socially cool. It's not appropriate. It's considered inappropriate to glorify family life. You don't any longer say that a mother and father. It's very nice to have a mother and a father, because all these poor children who don't have a father and all these ones over here who don't have a mother, they'll feel bad. So we don't want them to feel bad. We want a nice equilibrium kept. So we say if you have, you know, your parents are married, they're not married, they're de facto, you only have one parent, it's all the same. It's not a problem. You can have the same opportunity in life. But this is not true. Because stability, family stability is the basis to have good children. Even Arjuna at the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was saying, I won't fight in this battle because if I fight, I will kill so many of the men. And if these men are all killed, then their wives will be unprotected. And when the wives are unprotected, they'll become unchaste. And as a result of their lack of chastity, the children that are born will have very low values. And those children will go, and the society will go down, 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 down. So this in reality, we are seeing this. We're seeing this. So therefore, I would say, one point, again, I'm confused. I don't know what to do with my life. You say, don't go backwards, go forwards. Yes, go forwards. Go and talk to some people who are looking thoughtfully at the effects of modern society on the generation that you're part of. Talk to them and get some insights into what you might have to expect in the future if you become more and more and more and more divorced from any sense of, first of all, morality, second of all, any sense of duty, and ultimately, as I said in the beginning, the only thing that will dynamically, if it captures your heart, will dynamically keep you attracted to this process is if you develop appreciation or a taste for the loving and beautiful pastimes of Radha and Krishna, because that is the perfection of masculinity and femininity. But this is a very high subject, so to go from modern society and up to this society in one subject matter, it's not possible. There are many steps and stages between, but this is on one end and that is on the other. And it's really eye-opening when you see these things taking place. Okay, any more questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna, please accept my humble obeisance. I'm trying my best to put the question in the right way. I'm part of a research organization and we conduct a lot of research across all over India. And I've been interviewing a lot of women of various age groups. And as you have already told, many of the facets are already there available. But there's one thing which two or three of these girls spanning the age group of 18 upwards, married and unmarried, they have got this one question that if the man does not take care of me, if yes. he has lost his values,
yes.
then how, as a woman,
yes.
I can cope with that?
Yes.
Keeping my chastity,
yeah.
keeping my honor,
yeah.
keeping my independence,
yes.
if independence yeah. means being yeah. under the protection of your husband, would be the greatest independence. Yeah. But when you don't have that,
yeah.
what do I do?
This is a real problem. This is not something that you can talk away and say, oh, that's just a minor thing. This is a really serious problem. Because what's happening is, as the devaluation of the Vedic society and its values takes place, it's a reality for many young women that it's going to be hard for them to find a high quality of husband. This is a real problem, and the parents are arranging the marriage. So what should I do? This is not a situation that you can answer. Just say, yes, here's the answer to this. But I will say on the other side, that while this is a problem, there's more problem in the West in trying to find a reliable person who's going to take care of you. There's no question of submitting yourself fully to anyone. That's not part of the modern... You know that you can't submit yourself fully to anyone. That's already understood. But the men's values are going so low, the women, and this is again why I say that as the women become more and more independent, not intelligent, but independent without thoughtfulness, and the men become weaker, then the women have to pay something for that. That's on one side. On the other side is that it's a serious problem as Kali Yuga goes on. The people in general are becoming more and more and more weak in their character. And I cannot answer this question with a kind of an absolute solution. But I myself, for example, was also thinking like that, because before I became a devotee, I had already had many, being a Westerner, I had had many occurrences to have connection with Western men, and I had not met anyone that I would have felt comfortable that if I married them, they would take care of me. That actually wasn't, I could see that wasn't possible. They weren't going to do that. They were interested in some pleasure, and I was a pleasurable object. They weren't interested in any kind of depth of commitment. So I myself was actually thinking at a certain point, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Who's going to take care of me? And Srila Prabhupada, he addressed that actually for me in the sense that when I came to the temple, he asked me at one point, are you here in America with your family? Because he was a very cultured, saintly Indian gentleman. And I said, no. And he said, are you here with your husband? And I said, no. And he said, are you here alone? And he looked very concerned. And I thought, this is very unusual. And I said, yes. And he looked at me like as if it was a very unfortunate thing. And then he smiled very compassionately and he said to me at that time, he said, I will find you a nice husband. And I was a little shocked because I wasn't familiar with anything like this. I thought of somebody offering me a husband. It's not a Western concept. And so I just took it as a flattering remark, you know, and I said, thank you very much. And I left a little shocked. But practically speaking, my relationship with my husband, I had met him an hour before we got married. 1 hour, and then we got married. I didn't know him. I just arrived in Hong Kong. He would already arrive from Japan. He was American. I was Australian. He was a Hare Krishna, but his religion had before was different. His background was different. My background was different. But we were married. But the basis that made our marriage work through so many difficulties that are inevitable in life was the fact that we didn't want to displease him. We couldn't afford to displease him, because if we displeased him, then why were we doing anything? We were doing it all based on the fact that he had said, one life, take one husband and work through your difficulties. So recently, not that this is an answer to say that you should just accept any difficult situation, but I was speaking to one gentleman, and he was an astrologer, and he had met many, many people, and particularly he had met many Western young devotees, and he said to me, he said, they think that all their problems in their life is because they had these problems within the company of devotees. I married this man and my relationship was terrible, and so I left him. And then I married this man and that relationship didn't work, so I left him. He said, and when I look at their chart, I tell them that you have such and such a planet in such a house, and no matter how many times you get married, you're going to have exactly the same problem, because it's written in your chart that you're going to have a particular struggle in a particular way. So he says, why not work it out within the particular situation that you find yourself in? And how do you work it out? You have to transcend in some way the difficulty if you want to get through it. You have to. Now I'm speaking spiritually, but this is actually a fact. How else do you get through a difficult situation if you find yourself in a difficult situation? You have to have some faith in God. And you have to develop that to actually surmount the difficulties of life in this world. Because the illusion that I can enjoy life is meant to be fun, I'm going to have more fun doing this and that and that and this, it's an illusion. And you'll see it. You'll see it in your life or you'll see it in somebody else's life. That it's not all going to be fun. There's going to be some things that I'm not going to like at all. And you're going to have to face them. So why not? This is what Srila Prabhupada's reasoning was like this. Why not make this an offering to Krishna and try and serve? And then, He told me something very revolutionary when I was thinking to myself, that's very nice, but my husband's a little restless, he's not so mature, you know, it's hard to be married to him, arranged marriage, after all, this is difficult. So he said to me, if you think that your husband is incompetent, my husband was sitting there when he said this in an affectionate way, he said, if you think your husband is incompetent, you just come to me and I will take care of everything. I arranged the marriage, just come to me. I will take care of you. So this was the faith, I can say for myself, that had to be there to weather all the inevitable difficulties that they're going to be there. You can't remove them all. You can make wise choices, educated and considerate, and you can have so much help, but still difficulty must be part of life. It's inevitable. So this is just some reflections. I cannot give a solution to that serious problem, but it's an individual one, and each individual girl requires to work that out in her own way.
Anyway, if anybody has more questions, then Mataji is available. Even Lakshmi Moni Mataji and Akuti Mataji are available. So could we go, Mataji, to the next part of the program?
Yes.
So before we go to the next part of the program, we very, very heartily want to thank Mataji from the bottom of our heart, because as we know, knowledge and wisdom has to pass from one generation to the next, and that's the only way cultures can be maintained, right? We want to maintain our Vedic culture. This is how we try to understand the subtleties of our culture, and then we can pass it on. If we don't understand ourselves, how can we show by our own example or by our words to the next? So thank you so much for all of you attentively hearing and participating in this program. And we will thank Mataji by loudly chanting Haribol 3 times.